Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Hello, everybody. Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tomo. Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 156. Of course, we were down yesterday. We have to be up today. We can't be down 2 days in a row. We know that. We have people buying. We got stuff. Do we have Mr. Carl?
Oh, you do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, some of the things that show up in on a daily basis when you look around.
See, now the solution to that is you're not supposed to look around. I do, too.
Oh.
It's very troubling. Oh. It's very troubling.
Yeah, you know.
The state of cluelessness is a very good state.
Oh, yeah. You know, by the way, you do know that in 2023, since we're talking about the thing, markets always go up, right? Well, markets maybe go up because the people running them are doing things that are wildly illegal, and nobody ever goes to jail.
What?
So let me, here's this morning's
before you, example. Before you start with the go to jail, and before Russell talks about getting the guillotine, we have to at least have people address it's happening or care.
Here's one. Here's just one. About 3 years ago. Well, let's see. Yeah, 2.5, 3 years ago. November of 23. 33 state attorneys general, sued Meta, Facebook. This was just recently unsealed back then. You know, nobody has cared about this. Okay, nobody's cared about this. By 2015, approximately 40%, 3 years later, of the 9 to 12-year-olds were on Instagram, one of Meta's properties, as a daily user.
Instead of like playing softball, baseball, basketball, or like that.
Well, by 2015, yeah. 4 million of them were, okay? But by 2018, about 40% of 9 to 12-year-olds were using it. All right. By the way,
for a Luddite like me, why is somebody on Instagram and not Facebook?
Well, they're probably on both. Okay,
all right,
this
fair
is
enough.
This is from a lawsuit, though, okay? And the discovery that it generated, and therefore the data is real.
Okay.
All right. Now, that, by the way, is illegal. You have to be 13 in order to set up such an account.
Oh, come on. Out of all the laws, you know, nobody cares about any of that stuff.
Right. By the way, in a single day in 2022, over roughly 1.5 million inappropriately adult people were referred to those teen accounts.
What do you mean by inappropriate adult people?
Things that adults were posting that were seductive? Maybe.
See, I mean, without having the listeners think that I'm a total moron with other stuff, I am, but for a reason.
Uh-huh.
Because of the FINRA rules about you can put your money with Robinhood or any of those other places and piss it away like it's no tomorrow, and they have zero responsibility.
Right. You actually have responsibility.
We actually have responsibility. So
no, I understand.
But I mean, if I were to get on Facebook even to talk to you, it would be considered a communication to a potential client, and my brother would have to see my entire Facebook account, which I wouldn't be doing anything bad, but he doesn't need that.
I get that.
He doesn't need that. So I don't have Facebook and I'm Instagram because I get on the, what's the other one? LinkedIn. LinkedIn. Yeah. People ask me to join up with them, and I say yes, but I don't. That's all I ever do.
Yeah. So here is the point. An internal 2024 document made clear that acquiring new teen users is mission critical to the success of the company. All right. A 2017 memo, which goes back a little further, 7 years earlier, said that teen time spent is the top company priority of the year. Now, these are from a lawsuit against the company by multiple states. And this is some of the material that was uncovered during that. Now, here's the problem. An internal company policy required an account to rack up 17 separate strikes for sex trafficking before it would be suspended.
Would that take a week?
Well, I guess it depends. It depends on how often you attempt to sex traffic, right? So you could be reported 16 times if you were preying on children and your account still worked.
Let me, no problem
with this. So here's the thing. This is, this is one of many of these kinds of things, all right? But the reason I bring this particular one up.
All right, you've got the president's personal attorney as the attorney general, and if you bring money to him and kiss his ass, you don't get prosecuted. What don't you get?
And by the way, it doesn't matter what you do.
Right, doesn't matter what you do.
Right, now...
Unless he doesn't like you, then all kinds of
stuff. Well, then you got problems.
Yeah,
right.
Then you got problems.
So, but the reason I bring this specific example up is because it's so ridiculously egregious. Who possibly supports trying to bang 10-year-olds?
It's the Supreme Court... I mean, we talked about... I don't know if you listened on Thursday, but, Andrew is an attorney for a zillion years. So, one of the weaknesses is the Constitution was all put together, even though people were, of various walks of life, and they didn't necessarily trust other people. There was some sort of a gentleman's agreement between the different. It was a major advance in the sense that the judiciary was separate, other than like any other country. That was a major advance in the Constitution, but. The Supreme Court was essentially not given its own police force, thinking that there would be some coordination between the three branches of government. So the Supreme Court could come out and say, yes, driving on the shoulder on the expressway is against the law.
Right.
Okay. So 500 people could be driving on the shoulder tomorrow and the Supreme Court can't do anything about it. If the executive branch decides they're not going to do anything about it,
right.
Then you've got a problem, and that's exactly where we are. I mean, I don't know how people even people who don't hate the Democrats have to understand that's where we are. I mean, aren't we? I mean, am I wrong?
You'd think, right? I mean, you'd think so, perhaps.
Yeah.
I look at all the stuff that's going on right now, the reason I go after that sort of example is because it's so outrageous that nobody with a brain in their head can possibly support what these firms.
It's also something that no individual citizen can do anything about.
Well, yes, there is, but you. Well, cashier,
I mean, you,
your
I,
life.
We don't
well,
want
you,
can,
you cashier your freedom if you do.
Right.
So I mean, but the idea that, I mean, look. This is the 250th anniversary of America's formation, right?
And I don't listen to him, a lot. I know he used to be a fan, and now he's not. What's his name? Who's the guy who was in Trump's White House about 2 weeks, and now we always talk bad about him? New York guy.
Oh, Giuliani?
No, the other guy. Scamucci, whatever his name is. You know what I'm talking about. Is it the Scamucci or...
Yeah. Pharma Bro, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he talks about every 80 years we've had a massive crisis in this country since the Revolution. We had the Civil War, and we had World War II, Depression, World War II.
It's about that time.
It's about that time. And we're going through it, and people are really, like, questioning everything. And they're using... I heard an incredible indictment of... our leadership last night in a very small way. I don't even know if the guy was doing it. They're talking about this proposal from Iran that if we stop blockading the ports, they'll open up the strait, and we'll talk about the other stuff later.
Yeah.
And the guy said, there's no question in my mind that if it had been Trump's idea, it would be okay, but since it wasn't, it's not. And I'm sitting there going, from what my psychologist friend tells me about Trump, God, it has to be so accurate, but how scary is that?
Well, yeah, you know.
I mean, how scary is that?
Well, it's, I don't know that it's really all that different than any of these other guys.
Oh, come on. You're telling me you and me are not different than him?
No. I'm saying by the time somebody actually gets to a position of real power, okay. I don't know.
I think so. You know, my matter of fact, I have a producer from the show who asked me one day about what my feelings are about all this, and I said, you know, for a guy who stood on a trading floor in a room with 1,500 to 2,000 people for 20 years, people. Have a background to them. Not that they can't change somewhat. They can, hopefully, for the better. But if somebody is kind of a sleazebag and all along, and it's 10 years later, and you give them a situation, you predict how they're going to react, they're going to react like they always have before. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's honest and somebody cares about people, you can pretty much, even in a crisis situation, that's the way they're going to react. People really don't change that much. I mean, you can have people who drink a lot and then don't. I mean, you can do those kinds of things. But I said, you can't have a guy, in my opinion, that has been a sleazebag his entire life. And all of a sudden, he's in there and he surrounds him with some people you hate the Democrats enough, and you think that all of a sudden he's going to react differently. No, he's not. He's 79 years old. He's not going to change. I'm not going to change. You're not going to change.
Yeah, I just, you know, one of the things that as I've gotten older, you know, when I was young, I spent most of my time doing what most young men do. Figure, right, one way or another.
Were you like Nick?
Well,
he spent 90% of your money on cars, booze, and women, and he wasted the other 10%.
I wasted the other 10, right? Yeah. And you know, funny how that works, right?
Yep.
But you know, then I look at life today, and I say, all right, where are we as a nation? Where are we with, you know, with all these other things? And, you know, we were talking Friday about the nonsense with Elon and the SpaceX IPO and the quote-unquote confidential S-1, because God forbid you actually be required to file it out in the public where everyone can see it.
The rules are not for them.
Right, I mean, you know, and the thing is that the justification for things like that, and then Buffett, he doesn't have to actually declare what he's doing in advance, because God forbid he might move the market if he did that. Well, by the way, that means that he doesn't get the advantage of being able to do it quietly, where anybody else has to deal with that.
Go into that a little bit. I've been around a while, and when I started, it was really very simple. I think it was a few...
5%.
You could buy up to 5%, right, and you had to declare what you're doing. How exactly did Buffett get a carve out on that?
I don't know how he got a carve out. All I know is that absolutely nobody should have any carve out on anything like that.
Well,
because
what's the point of being a big shot if you don't get different rules?
Well, you know, and then you have this, pardon me, I don't have enough coffee in me yet this morning. But then you have this nonsense that's going on now where all of a sudden GameStop, all right, which, I mean, look, this was a company that had a perfectly legitimate business being a reseller for used games, and then all the game manufacturers stuck it in their butt and broke it off by going to subscription downloads, okay? Now, by the way, they all did that in concert, which in a country that actually paid any attention to the rule of law and didn't leave us with only the rule of violence to redress grievances, which is not a world you want to live in, all right? But that's the world we're in today.
Yep.
In a country with the actual rule of law, as soon as the second firm sat down with the first one and did that, they'd all go to jail for 10
years.
Yeah,
because just to make that call is crazy.
To do that. Look, when I was running my internet company, we had a literal 100 competitors in Chicagoland, okay, in the greater Chicago area. I mean, that's not bullshit. There really were 100 firms doing what I, more or less what I did. I mean, we all had different specializations and stuff, but the basis of what we were doing was the same. I wouldn't even sit down and have a beer with one of those people. One of the people that ran
Carol,
one of the other firms.
You're talking to
not even a beer.
You're talking to one person that has some idea what the hell you're talking about.
You know why? Because I legitimately considered that to be something that put me at the risk of a 10-year prison sentence.
Well, the when I was on the board of the CBOE, we're talking the 90s, we had two people who ran the place, Duke Chapman. Well, Chuck Henry was the president. One of the nicest, most talented men I've ever come across. I mean, I don't suppose he's still with us, but anyway, I have nothing but terrific things to say about Chuck. Duke was a pretty good guy, too. Duke was a chairman. He had a background. He went to his law school roommate was Arthur Levitt, head of the SEC, right? His dad ran, what's the name of the place that took over Channel 7? Capital Cities.
Oh, okay.
He got a job in government as something, and they made him sell his Capital Cities stock. And like, by the time he got out of government, it was like five times higher or something.
Nice.
But this is back when people actually sold the stock, not like today.
Yeah.
But he was the thought of those guys calling up like the chairman of the Philly and just like talking about maybe getting together. That's why one time the SEC had some big shindig. This before the FINRA, but the SEC had this big shindig, and they invited all the chairman. I went because I was on the board and I was a chairman of a committee, and they were ecstatic. He goes, we now have the SEC cover that we can actually sit with the same room as the guy who runs the Amex. Otherwise, they would never talk to that guy. Does anybody? I mean, I think we have some listeners maybe that are mature enough. Does anybody even know that you're not supposed to do that today? I don't think so.
Well, that's precisely the problem, right? Is that does anybody care?
No.
Does anybody consider that to be an issue?
I think people think that's good stuff.
But
regarding the GameStop thing, though, I was dying to talk to you about this morning.
Yeah.
Is that's not all that new. The idea that we have pretty much worthless stock, somebody's going to take it, we can buy another company for our worthless stock, let's do it. That happened during the dot-com stuff like every day, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it did. And one of the things that I think is so, so fascinating about this is that normally, though, when that happened, what you did was you rolled up some smaller firm that was, during the dot-bomb days, that was, so you tried to make two out of one, right?
Yeah.
And usually what you ended up with was zero. but this is especially galling because, first off, GameStop doesn't have the money to do this.
They're using your stock.
Well, no, they don't. They apparently have secured I saw a report that this was $20 billion. Now, I don't know if that's actually the number, but that they've secured a large debt package.
Really? Now,
to do this?
Now, you and I couldn't get that though.
Well, okay. This is there's plenty of people, myself being one of them, who don't believe this deal's going to go. All right, and if you're a gambler, then some puts on eBay look awfully attractive right about now, all right, for that exact reason. But you are gambling, and everybody need, you know, you need to understand that if you're going to do that, because the, you know, if this thing blows up in their face, and I think it will, you know, the price is likely to go down slightly from where it is today. Whether or not that you know, that ends up being a, you know, a payable event is an open question. But I mean, you know, you go out to, you know, you go out a few months and, you know, maybe put a spread on or something like this. And so there's, you know, there's options available to people if they want to, you know, if they want to try to play that kind of thing. I think there's, I personally, I don't think it's going to close. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it, not the least of which is that the pitch isn't, we're going to take it over and just sort of improve it. The pitch that was launched is they're going to go shoot at Amazon in terms of being in an online marketplace. Now, may I point out that Amazon runs their own warehousing, their own truck line, their own, you know, right? All areas of warehousing and fulfillment. eBay does absolutely none of that and has none of that infrastructure in place. So you're now, granted, I like competition, all right, and I like the specter of competition, and somebody taking a shot at those guys is okay. That's, you know, that's what competition is. But explain to me where you're going to get the institutional capacity to do this for that small. $20 billion is not that much money in the grand scheme of things these days, right?
No. Hey, do you have a, I had a dinner last night with one of my clients who's always, you know, really into, you know, he knows a lot about this stuff. I don't know what his, a lot of his, I don't want to ask him where his, he claims that the guy who's running GameStop has some massive bonus deal that if his, if the capital, the capitalization of the country reaches a certain amount,
he gets paid.
He gets some huge amount of dough. Is that true? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I haven't, you know, Chief, I don't follow these meme things to that degree, okay? I just, I'm not involved. I don't play those stocks. You're talking about, you know, the insanity of crowd stuff to an extreme degree, all right? I don't want to end up off the cliff on something like this.
Yeah, I don't either, but I'm
well, and I think it's highly likely that most people that are in there, you know, they're not going to get the phone call, just like you and I are not going to get the phone call before the next set of missiles fly over in Iran, right?
Yep.
All right. So, unless you have that kind of thing, and again, you're not so... You know, it's illegal to trade on these sorts of things, but nobody goes to jail. So Do I believe that this is a clean game? Absolutely, under no circumstances. Is it, if I try to follow this, I'm likely to get run over. I'm not interested. And I get it that people, you know, this is the kind of froth that goes on. The valuations that are being put on some of these transactions these days are nuts. There is nuttier than the SpaceX crap.
It was like they were in 2001.
Yeah, and I don't see how these work. I get it, you know. I mean, Hal's stalking horse has been for a long time and continues to be, you know, with cause, that as long as they keep cranking the money supply, the party will live on. I will point out that is not necessarily true, nor is the capacity to continue to do that beyond productivity growth something that can continue forever, because it always ends up back in inflation. It always bites people in the butt. And now you have everybody running around, oh, good God, the latest thing. Let's solve the problem by making the federal minimum wage $25 an hour.
Well, I mean, you know what?
Chief, when was the last time you heard one of these people say, the problem is cost, it's not income?
Okay. Now, when you... I, as you know, I think, as well as you and Hal, I still can do this. I can make an argument against minimum wage stuff.
Yeah, the absolute actual minimum wage is always zero.
Okay, but okay, my big intellectual disagreement with Hal. By the way, there's no other than maybe you. I love jousting with him. My own is the differences between him and the. I'll say the some of the teachers I had at the University of Chicago. Somehow, you know, Hal comes from this Australian, very monetarist, very libertarian sort of economic view of the world, and there's nothing wrong with it. Okay, by the way, it's exactly correct, and I wish I could agree with him on everything he says. The only problem is that I can't, because the guys that I were taught by very clearly knew that there was a big difference between what way economics ought to be, and maybe
and
still
way
is,
they really are.
And the way they really. And I'm from the group, and maybe because of my railroad experience, once you get involved in one spot, you can't say that's it. Because you've disturbed things,
right.
you can't allow three companies to become a cartel, and they not only can be a cartel on the side where they charge people money, they also can be a cartel in terms of how they control the wages of people that they hire.
Right.
So you have to be careful. I mean, one of a good example is in the Seattle. I don't know if you remember this. And when I first read it, I'm going, my economic background, it's like Hal's, it recoils in horror when I saw this thing. They talked about they wanted to put a minimum wage for all the people who, you know, we had the bars and restaurants and so forth in the Seattle airport. This is before COVID. At $19 an hour, and I'm going, what the hell is that? I mean, who could have conceived in such a thing? And all of a sudden, I sit down and go, wait a minute. Forget your Hal-isms and Milton Friedman-isms about it being a free market. That's not a free market. Those people,
well, that's true. It's not. That's a captive market.
Yeah, those people that get those licenses have shoved cash up somebody's ass, and they got the saloon, they got the restaurant, they got the newsstand over there. They're making a fortune. So the idea for those guys to say they're only going to pay somebody $12 an hour is so heinous, I can't even get there, right?
Oh, no, it's even worse than that. Years before the crazy, I swore off flying after 9/11 because of all the insanity that went on. You know, take off your shoes, take off your...
I agree.
You know, come on. And, you know, be at the airport 2.5 hours in advance, all's garbage. So, but if you bribe me with enough money, fancy that, I'll put up with the ignobility.
No, you'd go in, if you're first class and you're getting the quicker line.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, if you bribe me with enough money to go speak at an event or something like that, you know, whatever.
You can run an electric car like hell. I'd have to charge it up every 5 miles.
Everything's for sale. All we ever argue about is the price, right? So anyway, so I go to the airport, and again, this is not, you know, this is a new thing to a large degree after the whole 9/11 fiasco, much of which I did not, you know, wasn't all that exposed to because I just didn't fly after that unless I needed to go somewhere outside the United States. I mean, other than that, screw you, I'll get in the car. So I get there and I have an unopened can of soda, sealed. They forced me to throw it away.
Yeah, if it was water, I think you take it out because they could see it.
Well, but you know, all right, I mean, factory sealed, right? Right on the other side of the checkpoint, of course, is one of those little bodega things.
Oh, yeah, selling the same stuff.
Be happy to sell me the exact same thing for $5.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And the can that they made me toss in the trash was like 50 cents. Right?
I'm surprised. By the way, if we see Joel pop up, let me know.
Yeah, I will. So, yeah, I mean, this is... And then you say, well, you know, it's unjust because, you know, it's not a market. You just essentially, if I want something to drink, you forced me to pay 10 times as much money.
So, well, I mean, you see this... I mean, I'm sure if it was 50 years ago, Hal would be absolutely appalled at the fact that there was an ICC where all your railroad rates were set.
Yeah,
and by the way, I was appalled at that too. But yet, okay, get back in history. What caused it? Somebody gave somebody all this land between the first one out of Chicago, I believe it was Chicago to Galena, gave people land on either side of the line. You're supposed to be able to sell, and you build the line. Okay, so you do that.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, now there's a farmer in Huntley, Illinois, and all of a sudden, hey, great, there's a train here. I can get my grain to Chicago.
Right.
Would you take my grain to Chicago? Yeah, how much? How much you got?
Right.
You know, so you sit there and go, wait a minute. Just because there is no competition in this area, it can't be like, you know, if a bushel's $3, it can't be like 40 cents a mile.
well, Chief, we had the same sort of thing back in the day when you had landline telephones.
Yeah.
We had the same thing with regard, you know, your tariff rates, okay, for not just your interstate calling, but also for circuits. We dealt with pieces of this, you know, back in the 1990s. This was still there, all right, because phones were what you used, you know, to get to the internet, things like this. And you still carried that data service on those circuits. And the DS1s and things like this, they were all part of this, you know, this thing. So we had, now, there were people cheating. And this was one of the things that I tried to get regulators to go after. Oh, good God, no. No. Maybe the answer would have been, well, how about if I throw some $100 bills at somebody, I can get those rates too.
Yep.
By the way, Joel's up.
Okay, Joel will probably want to hear this quick. I'll be quick. One of the most, you know, as I'm sure we all have, we've seen investments go by. Matter of fact, the late Robin, who's going to show her uncle, he was a guy who had an orchestra during the war. Well, all the guys got drafted, right? So
right.
The guy's name was Spitalny. His first name was Leopold. So he had Leopold Spitalny had the all-girl orchestra, and they were up at the Edgewater Beach all the time. So if you want to hear an orchestra, he had to go. Well, these two guys showed up one day, wanted to borrow like $200, and he had some dough. Nah, I'm not interested. They were going to sell him 20% of the company. The two guys were Peter and Paul. Peter Paul Candy. Sometimes I had one sort of like that, not as bad. In the OEX pit, when they went to the you know, the cell phones or the car phones, they used to call them.
Right.
What were the names of the places? The towers. You had to pay every time you're driving through Nebraska. You had to pay the guy who owned the tower. Remember that? What did they call those things? The roaming charges.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so, but the roaming charge went to the tower that picked you up and then sent it to where it was going. So right. your roaming charge could be like 5 hours a phone call. So right. these guys in the OEX pit, they say, hey, we're gonna get this, you know, roaming tower in like Iowa, Nebraska. I'm going, I don't know anything about that stuff. God, can you imagine how much the last one up there had to be in Kearney, Nebraska. Every trucker that drove through Nebraska, which is like everybody going to L.A. or Denver or something, they all used that damn thing, and it was like $5 or $8 every phone call. Can you imagine how much those people made? Soon and I said, nah, why would I want any part of something like that?
Well, because as soon as the phone rang, you got rich. That's
oh, no
why.
Kidding.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not sure Kenny's piling on if he's on TV, but we have Joel. Joel, how are you, bud?
Hey, good morning, Chief. Hiya, happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I want
to. Mile.
You've been in the markets for a while. Do you get shivers up your spine with what's happening to Micron here every day?
Because
that was the poster child of the crash in 2001. Micron went from 120 to 6.
Well, first of all, I want to say it's not Cinco de Mayo; it's Cinco de Bio.
Yeah, bye bye.
You know, you want to hear the thing about Micron is it still trades at a reasonable PE, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's reasonable?
What is it, under 10? I mean, I think it's pretty,
I don't think their revenue per share is under 10. I will look.
I don't know, Chief. Maybe we'll have a little fundamental debate here. Oh, fundamentals. Oh, my gosh. What are we talking about?
Yeah, why would we do anything like that?
You know what? It's the most important thing, Chief. It's, you know, maybe you're not in it. You know, if you're not in it, that's one thing, right? But if you're not losing money shorting it, then that's a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason why, Joel, this one is close to heart. Back when people were really trying to do seminars and options and stuff, they actually want to learn how to trade. Now they just, I don't know what they want. They want the green light to come on, we're supposed to buy or something. So we're down in the Bahamas in the market's going right. This is right before, it had to be after Y2K, but before the thing crashed. And Micron's trading like $95, and it's going up like every day. And it's the same stock, right? So there's 60 people, and I'm lecturing down in this hotel in Bahamas, of all places. I hated it down there, but that's another story. Anyway, so I go, how many in the room own Micron? And, you know, like half the room hands go up. Stock's trading like $95, and it'd run up from like 40 or something, below, maybe lower than that. And I said, when is the number that, you know, that you guys are going to roll over on a Monday morning and say it's too high? And the answer, of course, was never. And I said, well, okay, how about this? How about I'll buy right now, I'll buy your Micron for $120. If anybody's got here, I'll buy. Of course, I couldn't have, but I said that anyway. One guy raises his hand and goes, that proves it's worth $150. You're trying to steal it from me. And I go, it couldn't have been 4 months later. The stock was under 10.
Chief, by the way, it's 11 times sales right now.
And the forward PE is 5.9.
Forward guess. And by the way, the market cap has gone from 106 billion a year ago, roughly, to 650.
Anytime, if you go back, if you can find the numbers, if you went back to the 2001 absolute crash, the number that these stocks all got to, Cisco and all these other stocks, all got to be like 11, 12 times revenue. And that's the number that I always look at. Now, whenever you see a company that size, you know, Microsoft was up, got there, but NVIDIA, Micron, when you see a company that size, 11, 12, 13, 14 times revenue, it's been a historical danger zone. I'm not saying you shouldn't keep buying it. It could go up even more. But to me, that's how does a company that size grow into that number? How do they double revenue, by the way, unless the Fed helps them out?
Well, the bigger problem is how do you have a 40% profit margin and a 67% operating margin not have people shoot at you?
Yeah, well, that's a number. Anyway, so I'm saying that, but when you start talking about 5% a day, it gets ahead here across. What you're really saying is the people who valued it a month ago are idiots, right? When it deserves to be 30% higher a month later, a company that's been in business 40 some years. It's not like it's a new technology.
You know what it really seems like? It's like all these comparisons that we're making now don't even matter.
No, well, they never do until they do.
Exactly, and. the AI revolution is going to make us not dependent on oil, okay? It's going to be deflationary, and it's going to create jobs. So you just have to go with the flow until you get run over.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it comes down. You know what's funny, Joel? And I'm certainly not accusing you of this. Whenever people pour money into the system and the prices of the stocks go up, and this has happened since the Weimar Republic, right? Or maybe before that. It happened with tulips. Somebody's job is always to try and justify it, right? Oh, God, it's AI. Oh, God, it's .com. It's click-throughs. Whatever it is, it's somebody's job to justify it, right? Matter of fact, yesterday... I've been looking every day. I read the headlines here on my traffic, weather, and sports. Is that the Korean stock market is hitting new highs? Their money supply all of a sudden is going up 7% on a 7% rate.
What a coincidence!
Yeah, what a coincidence. how long can we get away with it without the inflation? I think we're at the end of not today or tomorrow, somewhere along the line we're getting the end. By the way, yesterday this part that nobody even looks at, 30-year blew through 5%. And the 10-year was over 4.5 for a while. If all of a sudden these interest rates start to creep, is that going to put any kind of a break on this or not?
No.
I think you're right. What about a sudden shock, 7.5-8% one day because some auction doesn't go so well?
Yeah, and they'll buy the dip. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Chief, I mean, you know, we've been in a lot of different markets and a lot of different market environments, and, you know, and you just keep learning. That's why, you know, you do what you try and do for investors. I try and do what I do for investors, informing them, taking the information that we have, and trying to make the best long-term and short-term trading decisions. And right now, it's a whole new, you know, I could pull out my playbook and I just can rewrite it and say, okay, well, all those years of learning all these different things are just not as relevant as they were.
Well, and they never are until they sort of are.
No.
You know, I'm real happy staying real long here, just trailing some puts underneath, and just in case.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, wait. Puts? They still list puts? I thought you only sell puts.
You know, here's something that it'll frost even your mature brain. About a month.
Well, let's not get carried away there.
About a month before the crash in '87, when all people did was drive puts into every day, right? Sell puts in the morning, buy them back in the afternoon, and that's in the OEX pit. Somebody actually went out and had big buttons made. That they put on their, because the first trade every morning, the broker turn around and say, 80 puts, where are you? And they'd sell you some. So you started every day with puts in your pocket that nothing but go down, right? So if people put, they actually went out and put big buttons on their trading jacket that says, say no to puts. Nobody knew that.
You know, Chief, you know, the other, I mean, you just got to look at it too. You know, I mean, we want to look at fundamentals. I mean, some of these earnings been pretty good, with the price reactions have always been a little bit different, but yep. The other thing that we look at is the vol, and you know, you do get some spikes here and there, but the volatility's coming down, and you can look at resistance, or there is no resistance. So when I talk to people about the market, the wild fluctuations, if they're following the stock, they've been in it for a long time, you know, just try. Don't worry about the highs and the lows and stuff, but just, you know, that closing price. You know,
where did it end up?
What's the all-time closing high? What's my mark?
So what do you do? You're much more of a, I'm none, so you're much more of a technical dude than me. When you see a Micron that has gone from, I'll put the two-year chart here. It was, let's say 12/15/25, it was $200. Now it's $604. And is where on a graph that's straight up like that, how do you even come across a resistance line? Is there one?
I mean, people use Fibonacci extensions, which I'm not a big fan of, but the only thing you can do, and this is, you know, not sure, you know, I mean, it's a tool, is wait for consolidation. And once you get a consolidation, and the markets have these periods of consolidation. I mean, I could look at Micron here. Just going back to the middle of April, you know, hit 450, just hung out, boom, broke out for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, broke out, had a 3-day move, and then it kind of just hung out, not as well-defined a consolidation period, 5 days in consolidation, yesterday, boom, break out. So the only thing you can do is look for these consolidation periods, see if there's a little bit of decline in volume, if the decline of volume comes in, that means maybe buyers are taking a little bit of break. But Chief, it's 7:47. I gotta hop.
All right,
always
bud.
Enjoy being with you. We didn't get to talk any sports, but we can do that next week.
Your Detroit guys came back and won.
The Pistons. Yeah. Tarik Skubal out. Boy, big blow to the Tigers. But we'll catch up on sports.
No, I was talking about the Pistons came back and beat
I know, the Pistons, yeah. They're giving me a little bit of indigestion. But we'll see what they can do against the Cadavaliers. Okay,
got you. Do we have Kenny?
We do.
How are you, bud? Good to see you.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How was your TV appearance last week?
I had an early... The TV appearance did fine. I was in New York, but last Tuesday I had an early breakfast with a client, so I was unavailable. But yes, I spent the week in New York, and I did. I had clients, I had TV, I had a bunch of stuff going on, so it was great. Busy.
So where are you staying at one of the high end joints, the Palace?
No. I stay in my apartment in Midtown on 52nd Street and First Avenue.
Well, there you go. That's a nice. Yeah. Is that a nice spot?
Yeah, it's a nice spot. It's off the beaten path because it's way east, right? It's on 1st Avenue and 52nd Street, so it's kind of quiet, but it's perfect for where I have to go, right? I have to be in Midtown for Fox, which is directly across on 6th Avenue. I have to go down on the to Yahoo and New York Stock Exchange, so I jump on the 6th train and go straight down, so it's very convenient.
Okay, that's cool. I haven't been there in so long. Is New York still all cabs, or is everybody Ubering?
So, well, the traffic in New York City is crazy, partly because they've got all the bike lanes. They've still got, you know, those restaurants in the street. And so a lot of the streets going across town are all one lane. So you get one car, one truck that stops or gets stuck. It backs up everything. So the truth is it's mostly a disaster getting around the city. So in the good weather, I'm either going to walk or take a city bike much faster. Or in the wintertime, I'll just take the subway. I mean, I'll still take the subway to get downtown, but it's because it's much quicker. But I won't really take the subway much after, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock at night because, A, there's no reason to. You know, you never know what's going on down there. At least during the day, there's a lot of people, and if you're careful, you're careful, right? You just have to be aware.
Yeah, the subway system is really fascinating. I mean, it's a real guy for me, but... You know, it's really
I rode the subway for 42 years when I lived in New York, and really, honestly, never had a problem until we got towards the end of or the middle of the de Blasio mayorship, because things in the city started to deteriorate in terms of safety and police and all that stuff. So then it became much more noticeable. But under Giuliani and under Bloomberg, it was easy to and you felt comfortable riding the subway. Like, you weren't really nervous the way I see a lot of people are today. People are very, 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 very nervous. You can see it. They stand against the wall when they're down in the platforms. They don't stand near the rails anymore, like, you know, a lot of people used to do. I mean, I was guilty. When I went down to the subway, I stood right where the door was coming, right by the rails, right? Somebody could have come along and, you know, rammed into me and pushed me right over, but I never thought about it. Today, when I get out on the subway, I stand with my back against the wall until the train comes into the station, then I'll move forward. And that's really what you see most people doing.
Yeah, when I took it, there were so many people down there, the thought of somebody being an idiot, it never even crossed my mind.
Correct. No, 100%. And I never did either. For 40 years, I never even crossed my mind. Now, it's very top of mind when I go down to the subway.
Really? Wow.
Very, very much aware of who's around me, where I'm standing, kind of just being very, very... very aware of what the situation on the platform is. I hate to say it because I spent 40 years in the city, and it was at the time in the late 80s into the 90s and early 2000s, there was no place, just like in Chicago, there was no place like a big city, and New York City was just one of those places. Today, it's a very different New York City.
Yeah,
and it's
going
to continue to be different over the next 3 years with the current mayor.
I don't understand how whoever it is, they have to understand. Whoever the mayor is, you have to understand that your advantage is public transportation.
That's right.
If it turns into a disadvantage, how do they not know? I mean, the same thing's happening here in Chicago. It can't be a disadvantage because that's your advantage. That's, you can get workers to work for $5 for God's sake and back. You know, I mean, that's a massive advantage for you to be able to recruit people and have a business community. I mean,
it's unbelievable to me. I agree with you. I agree with you. And like I said, for the 40 years, 42 years that I lived in New York, I traveled everywhere by subway because it was really the fastest, most efficient way to get around the city. 100%. But, you know, I was there last week. The weather was beautiful. I go, screw it. I went and I got on a city bike. I drove myself to Fox. I drove myself downtown to Yahoo. First of all, the weather was great. And so I didn't mind riding the city bike. And I go, you know what? Why do I want to go down under the subway when, A, I don't know what's down there anymore, and B, the weather's beautiful, and I'll ride the bike.
Kenny, what did, when I
ride the battery-powered bike, so it's not like I'm sweaty and shit when I get there. I'm not. It's actually great. Now, in the middle of summer, when it's 100 degrees, will I do it? Probably not. But, you know, it is what it
is. What was when I first started, I was trading here, and I got some backers from out east, and I went out to see these guys, and I went to New York and got on the exchange and all this kind of stuff. And it had to be, I'm going to say, 1982-ish.
Yeah.
And the city was, the entire Times Square was nothing but porn shops. I mean,
that's
city
what it was like in the early late 70s, early 80s, 100%.
But now, how did it evolve from there? I mean, what in the subway.
Rudy Giuliani came in and cleaned the place right up.
But the subways themselves were in such disrepair. Wasn't there like a 2 or 3 year period where somehow they got all this money, and all new trackage, all new everything?
They bought new trains because the old trains, they were graffiti, they were dirty, they were all that stuff. They were hot, they were on air conditioned. Then in the 80s when Giuliani became the mayor, and then the city got a bunch of money, and the bull market took off, and the city was flush in cash, and they upgraded the subway cars. They were air conditioned. They were better to ride. And so it was always the easiest and most efficient way to get around the city, and I had zero problem doing it.
Hey, right? Pullman made those cars, the R-46. I was there.
I believe so, yes.
And they were...
I believe so, yes.
And your people in New York were so friggin' crooked, it was scary. Half of them went to jail.
I hear you. I hear you.
You think I'm kidding?
I know you're not kidding.
When Pullman went out there, first thing they did was say, we love Ranger tickets, and we love this country club. So Pullman had to join a country club for these idiots to play golf.
Yeah.
What was the guy named Larry Piano and a bunch of? They all went to jail.
I can't remember all of them, but yes, there were a bunch that were.
And we Pullman had to deal with all these idiots.
Yeah,
it was so bizarre. It was so New Yorkish. But we built 750 cars for New York, and the people who wanted someday, Kenny, I'll give you a story about the trucks on the cars. Well, I guess I could be brief here, but because you'll enjoy it, maybe the. The trucks on the trucks is the wheel and axle combination where the motors and stuff are underneath, right? It's a big part of the car, obviously.
Yeah.
They always got the trucks from Buckeye Truck. They were like 12,000 pounds. So New York said, we don't want that anymore. We want lighter trucks because we want these cars to be lighter because the bridges and everything. We want trucks that are like 9,000 pounds or 9,500 or something, which is a big deal difference, right? So, I'm not a metallurgical guy, but me sitting and talking to these guys at Pullman, I got pretty up to speed. I couldn't draw one, but... So, they knew it was too light of a truck. So, Rockwell, who had never made a truck in their life, bids on the thing. So, Pullman had nothing to do with the truck. New York inspectors, they got it from Rockwell. We weren't even allowed in. Pullman, were not even allowed in to inspect them or to approve them, right? So, all we did was they got delivered, and we plopped the train on it, and off it went. Well, of course, now these things are falling apart. Now, the engineers would say they had stress issues. Well, there's a bolt that held this arm on the thing. Well, the bolt would come loose, and the arm would swing out and was taking like a couple guys' legs off that were workers on the side of the thing. Well, that's not good, right? So the solution was we needed a forged bolt. Most bolts are cast, but a forged bolt is a pretty serious thing. This is 1970-something. They were like 5 hours a piece for a bolt. You only can imagine. So they retrofitted the entire fleet with these new bolts. Well, of course, now some other spot, there's cracks. I remember one of these metallurgical guy goes, hey, Tom, the thing is just not beefy enough. All we're doing is chasing the stress all around the truck. So New York has the nerve to sue Pullman.
Right.
Because we had nothing to do with it. They said, no, we're getting it from Rockwell. You can't even come in and inspect them. We're just delivering them to you. They sue Pullman, and they win. So Rockwell had to replace all the trucks. I don't know if they went back and got the old trucks or what they did. The entire fleet, all the trucks had to be replaced. Only because they went out on a limb and said, you guys got to make a truck for 9,000 when everybody knew you needed 11,000. Plus, they defined the environment as only, there wasn't going to be any more, when you went by, you used to clack the wheels. There wouldn't be more than a quarter inch or 3/8 of an inch gap, and people went out and looked at them. They had 3-inch gaps. We're tired. The wheels are going in there. Anyway, New York was difficult to deal with, shall we say?
And it's still difficult to deal with. In fact, it's probably more difficult to deal with today.
Yeah, anyway. So, what do you make of? I was just talking to Carl about what do you think about stocks like Micron to make this all of a sudden it's up 5% a day every day? And
listen, I think Micron is right at the heart of this whole AI thing. It's about memory. It's about high bandwidth memory, of which there is a complete shortage. And so I'm not surprised by Micron. Certainly, I think it's up 600% since the fall of last year. It's crazy what Micron has done, but they've all done it. Western Digital did it. STX did it, right? Because they're all in that same memory sector of the AI trade. So I'm not necessarily surprised. Do I think maybe it's a little bit stretched? You keep saying it's stretched, but then it keeps going up every day, right?
Well, does a company that size trading as today 12 times revenue, does that bother you? It does me.
You know what? Yes, but then no, because think about where it is, right? Think about the sector and the narrative around why it's there. So I'm torn between, is it stretched, is it overpriced, is it trading at valuations that don't make sense, or is the story so great that this is just going to keep surging and surging? And so, you know, I'm kind of in that I'm not sure spot. Do I own it? I don't own it directly. I own it through I own it through the Triple Q's. I own it through I think it's in the Ives ETF too, IVES, Dan Ives' ETF. It may not be. I have to look at it and see, but I think it is. So I own it that way. I don't own it though directly, as an individual holding.
Well, this is from my research during the 2001 fiasco. When a stock gets above 10 revenue per share, I ask myself the question, self, can this place double in size? And
right.
If the answer is yes, and by the way, there are a lot of companies that can, you know,
yep,
absolutely can. I don't think Microsoft, NVIDIA, Micron can double. Unless the world, the only way they can double in value.
Can't double from here.
Well, the only way they can is if the Fed, you know, does 10% a year for the next 5 years, yeah, they can double. But that's not right. Really, that's not really a double. I mean, it sort of is, but it isn't. I mean, if Microsoft doubled, they're the only company left in the world or what? I mean, they're too big to double. I mean,
right. I hear you. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but do I think it's going to double from here? I don't. Do I think Microsoft's going to double from here? I don't. But do I think Microsoft is a name that that you should own and that you need to be in, and that it's a core holding? I do, and I continue to own it. And on weakness, I continue to buy it.
We have a lot of it here that I manage for people,
yeah.
And I keep resisting selling the Microsoft, because I think it's, first of all, it's easy to hedge, right? It's very liquid. And to sell the Microsoft and go buy the Qs is kind of a zero-sum game. You're buying the same thing. So
yeah.
I'd much rather deal with the Microsoft, because I think it's, out of the bunch of them, it might be maybe one of the best. But the conclusion, I'm going back to 2001, Kenny, so I don't remember this stuff. I went through the whole top 10 stocks back then, same way you could do today.
Yeah,
and I looked at the revenue per share, and I came to the conclusion that these things were way too friggin' high. Now, but each individual one could double; they just all couldn't.
Yeah, correct.
Was my conclusion. So now I feel that way about 8 or 10 stacks. Now, I just don't know which are the ones that are actually going to succeed in this and which aren't. But I got news for everybody. Unless the Fed like doubles the money in the system, all 10 of them are going to double in the next 5 years. It's no way. They're all too big. I mean, you're not going to get Microsoft, NVIDIA, Micron, Amazon. They can't all double, or they'll be the only 10 companies left.
Yeah, no, right. No, right. They can't all double. That's why not every company out there is going to succeed. There will be a natural attrition, but I do think the key names that we're talking about in the industry, so whether it's Micron and Western Digital and Microsoft and NVIDIA, I think those stocks are going to be successful. I don't think those are the stocks you have to worry about.
Okay. We just had a message from Kevin. He goes, there's a memory shortage because the new version of the Hunt Brothers bought up the market. That's interesting.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's
anyway, so here we go. Yesterday, and I've been saying it in my note for a while, I think once again we've gotten to a place where we're a little bit too euphoric considering what's going on around us. And you and I both know that the geopolitical stuff doesn't necessarily price stocks in the long term, but it does create chaos. And that's kind of what you started to see yesterday in the Dow and the Dow transports. They got crushed while the rest of the market didn't, because it's all about oil transportation costs, right? The uncertainty, the global supply chain, because of what's not happening in the Strait, right? We keep saying, Trump keeps telling us, and Bessent keeps telling us, and Pete Hegseth keeps saying, oh, we killed their Navy, we did this, they don't have any intel, blah, blah. Okay, then open up the Strait. But they still can't, because Iran continues to disrupt the flow. Now, Trump says, you disrupt the flow, and we're going to blow the smithereens. Okay.
I think Trump is over his head, in my opinion.
Agreed. I think now, you know, I don't think he's over his head, but I think, you know, I don't think any of them did the homework, right? To really consider. Well,
did you hear
how long this might take and the impact it was going to have?
Did you read the listener dude last night about Iran's deal that they proposed was we stop blockading our ports and they'll open up the strait? And the guy said, if Trump would have proposed that, it would have been the greatest deal ever. But since it wasn't his idea, he can't do it. Because that's a perfect solution right now in the short term while they talk about the other stuff.
Yeah, that would be the perfect solution.
But he can't take it because it wasn't his idea.
Well, he's also, you know, trying to choke him. He just needs to choke him economically, which I think is happening, by the way. I mean, another week of this, and they're going to really be choking. I think they're going to be choking economically.
What about us? What about the? What about?
Yes, to your point, if he didn't think about it, he's not going to push it forward, right? Because he needs to be the one to say, "Oh, this is my idea."
Well, you know, you got to be careful that we don't choke the three people that are lending us all this money: Japan, China, and Britain.
Correct.
But why are we forgetting? I'm really surprised that mature, intelligent investor like yourself didn't lead today, but it's by saying the 30-year crept through 5% unnoticed.
It didn't go unnoticed, I don't think so, and it is in there. It's probably in the third paragraph of my note when I talked about what happened to rates, the 2-year, the 10-year, and the 30-year, now above 5%. Not that it went unnoticed. That was part of the focus, why the down the transports and the market came under some pressure, because, once again, you got the rising inflation, higher rates, no rate cuts coming, and potentially we're going to be talking about rate hikes and not rate cuts. I know that door is open and we've already discussed it, but I think if this stays like this, that's going to become much more of a conversation.
Why? When, if ever, are, and again, this is kind of old news, it's old guy talking. When, if ever, are people going to realize that the Fed, once they let the inflation thing out of the bag to the point where they have, that they don't control long-term rates at all? Well, they do to the extent that they go out and buy $4 trillion of it like they did during COVID and put it on the balance sheet. But that's a zero-sum game, I think. But you know, if people think inflation is going to be 5%, long-term rates are going to 8%. There's nothing the Fed can do about it.
I agree. So that's why somebody's got to get in there very quickly and slow it down. Because if they don't, if Trump doesn't come up to, if there's no answer and the straits stay closed and oil continues to stay up here and cargo doesn't move through the strait, we're going to get there much faster than I think any of them realize. But I think the market's telling you it's on its way there. And that's going to become a problem.
What the?
That's going to be a problem for the midterms, and you'll have a complete sweep. In the midterms, and then you'll have, you know, a lame duck. You're going to have a lame duck president anyway, no matter what, because it's his last 2 years. But, you know, if the Democrats take control of both houses, it's going to be ugly, just in the sense that nothing will get done, and they'll be trying to, you know, throw him in jail for the next 2 years, and that's what we're going to have to listen to.
Well, that would be counterproductive.
Counterproductive. 100% would be counterproductive.
This is the last one. I mean, Hal's probably on, but maybe you and follow on when you dash. But you know what's sort of interesting is I sense the difference. I mean, you look at the political landscape, and right now, at least in my opinion, the people who are controlling the White House, even though they think they are, they're not the MAGA people. I mean, they're the part that goes over the fence last. I mean, the farmers have been annihilated by this guy.
Yeah.
So it's the people who have this, you know, the money. And When you look at the inflation stuff, and even Powell, you know, they talk about inflation. Back in the inflation day of the 70s and 80s, people actually did care about it because they were the political power, the middle class and those people. And if they were getting, you know, grilled by inflation, they weren't happy. But now I think the people who are in charge, the Musks and the Bezos and stuff of the world, they don't care. I mean, they'll get a lip service, but they will absolutely take a 20% rise in the stock market if the rest of the people have a 6% inflation rate or 8 or 9. They don't care. It doesn't affect them. I think the political base is so different now. People, you know, everybody says, oh, man, look at Ma and Pa. They can't. What the difference? Nobody cares about Ma and Pa. The people that are in charge right now don't care about Ma and Pa. I mean, it's a whole difference. Now, I don't, if the Senate and and House change, if they change just because people don't like Trump, that's not going to solve anything. Hopefully they're going to change because there's a different people are in charge, that maybe the middle class, what's left of it, actually can get a voice or something. I don't see that happening. I just see, that's why the Democrats, I used to, you know, I was, my whole life was a Democrat. Now I'm in the middle, but because I don't think either side is messed up. But the idea that somehow or another we're gonna govern for everybody, I don't see anything on the Democratic side other than get Trump the hell out of there, which I think is a worthy goal, but it's not the only, it shouldn't be the only goal. You're gonna get him in and do what? You're supposed to do something better. Well, what's the better?
I don't know. You're supposed to do something. We're gonna find out what the better is, right?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, we'll do something, but the 2 years of fighting back and forth. I had an interesting conversation with somebody last night, and I won't bore you with this. We're talking about executive orders. And you know what, Kenny? Nobody knows what they are legally.
Nobody knows what the executive orders are, right?
But yeah, I mean, I said to the guy, you know, they're not a law. You can't be arrested for violating an executive order. There's no law. There's no, you know, there's no 5 years in jail. There's no. It's a proclamation by somebody regarding what they're going to do in the executive branch. It's not a. What do you mean? It's all we have now. Congress. No, it's still not a law. What do you? You can pontificate every day and sign something in front of the camera, which he loves to do. Does anybody even keep track of them? I mean, what about an executive order that, say, Roosevelt put out there? If it hasn't been rescinded, is it still any good? Does anybody know what it is? Where is it even listed?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any of this stuff. I'm no attorney, but I'm like,
I don't either. Yeah, I don't either.
Anyway, buddy, take care of yourself. When are you back on
the
tube?
I'll talk to you next week.
Are you back in Florida?
I'm back in Florida. Yeah.
Well, you want to make it back for the heat or what?
No, I gotta go back to New York on Sunday, so I'm only here for a couple more days.
Well, you know, now that you got the private jet, it's a lot easier.
Yeah. Goodbye.
See you, bud. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 186. Do we have Professor Hill?
Hey, Tom.
How are you, bud? Sorry to run over, but thought maybe you might be interested in that last little bit.
Oh, no problem.
Well, I was talking about you earlier.
Yeah, I know. I heard.
What'd you think?
I logged on probably about 7:20, and you guys were talking about the railroads, and I just finished a series called Hell on Wheels. I think you'd like it. It was originally on AMC, and it ran for like 5 years. And it was about the race to Ogden's coal fields by the Union Pacific and the Central Pacific.
Wow.
I grew up Mormon, and some of the scenes involving Brigham Young, I think they're a little over-exaggerated. Like, I don't think he would grab a cigarette out of a whore's mouth and smoke it, for example.
Why would anybody even think of that? If you're gonna do that, what else are you gonna do with a whore? I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, it just isn't what a Mormon would do, and they're, you know, growing up Mormon, you kind of think when you're watching this, you know, they probably should have asked a Mormon about what Mormons do. You know, I don't think they asked very many people. I think they asked a Southern Baptist. Nothing against Southern Baptists, but and I was in the Navy with them. You don't ask a Southern Baptist what being a Mormon's like when you're writing a movie script. Other than that, I thought it was pretty good. They had freemen, they had Irish immigrants, Chinese immigrants. It involved the friendly natives and the hostile natives. Custer makes appearance in the final season, and it just shows the corruption and the land speculating.
Is this the Transcontinental? Is this the Transcontinental Railroad or something afterward?
No, it's that. It's all about that. It's just the corruption, the world's oldest profession. It was really interesting.
Well, I mean, what do you want to know? I'm very well read on that whole thing. What do you want to learn? What do you want to know?
The final scene is my favorite, because this guy, the protagonist for all five seasons, he's a Confederate veteran, and he joins the railroad to hunt down the Union soldiers that burned his wife and son alive.
Oh, good. Yeah.
On the way to Atlanta, you know, Sherman's torching of Atlanta. So he was on a crusade to kill them, and he ended up becoming a railroad man. And the final scene has him going to China. It's just really good. It's just really good.
Well, the whole
I enjoyed it.
You mentioned the Irish and the Chinese.
Yeah, it showed it. It showed it unvarnished, man. It showed the West as it probably was, just unvarnished, dirty and stinky and manure and urine-filled streets. I mean, it was unvarnished. Most movies today that depict the Old West or the New York of the 19 or the 1860s just get it wrong. They just get it wrong.
Oh, it's yeah. I mean, where are you going to get all the manure to put it on the set?
Yeah, where are you going to get the 40 horses that died in the streets on a daily basis in New York City? Where are you going to get all those dead? All those dead.
And you know, you can't run out with the cherry picker and pick them up because they don't have a cherry picker.
Yeah, yeah. They just died.
Just as a very brief talk about some of the corruption. A lot of it was from the Central Pacific. The Union Pacific is one of the first. They weren't the first. They were one of the first big corporations. But there was a guy who did all the... some of the stuff was absolutely spectacular, Al. And some of it, you know, not so. The guy who was the main man was a guy from the Union Army named Colonel Dodge. And that's why when you go into Omaha or any of these cities, there's going to be a Dodge Street. Because Colonel Dodge, he's going back...
Dodge City, right?
Dodge City. But yeah. But the guy from the western part, I forget the guy's name, but he was a big pusher of this, but he was from San Francisco. Now, every time he had to go to Washington and try and get money from Lincoln and whatever, Lincoln was the guy who was really behind it. Now Lincoln
he was a railroad lawyer.
Railroad lawyer for the Illinois Central and others here. And he I don't know, I've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again. The first railroad to put a bridge over the Mississippi River was who? You're not going to get this, but the Chicago, Rock Island, and Pacific. So they put this bridge.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
Although, of course, the ferry boat guys are now outraged, right, that there's this bridge.
Yep. Anytime a technology comes in, yeah, they're outraged people.
So somebody in the fog allegedly runs into the bridge, kind of wrecks the bridge.
Yep.
So... Lincoln is the attorney for the Rock Island, and the ferry boat guys are saying, you know, was that a fog? If that bridge wouldn't have been there, blah blah blah. But his famous question to the guy was, did that bridge move to hit you, or did you move to hit the bridge? And the guy's like, what? He goes, it's simple. Did the bridge move to hit you? Well, no. Well, it looks to me like you're at fault.
Well, that's like the steamboat that a German invented. Or built in the 1700s, late 1700s, he built a steamboat and was going up and down the rivers in Germany, in the German region. And the people that built the wooden boats with the sails, they were, and the sail constructors, they all got upset and burnt down the steamboat. And then Europe protected their industries from the steamboat. And the steamboat is just a disruption that came about because of this thing called freedom, this revolution in America where, the colonists were relatively free of the British king and the Revolutionary War and the Industrial Revolution are all one major disruption where people were, for the first time, free in the world. They were free to pursue their passions without government restrictions and licenses and monopoly making, and you guys were talking about that earlier, where you're talking about a cartel in both output markets and in input markets with regard to labor. Well, those cartels are only possible with government regulations. Well,
right, and it doesn't surprise me. I kind of want to get off this. I mean, I don't want to get off my railroad topic, but it doesn't surprise me that if at some point you see prices and everything else and profits running way ahead of wages, that somebody doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, we got to do something to close this gap. Now, that person probably isn't smart enough to know that the supply of labor or the demand for labor is down because they move stuff overseas. There could be a bunch of different reasons, but the simple way is, wait a minute, when you made X percent of share, you're paying people $10 an hour. Now you're making three times as much, and you're paying people $11 an hour, you should be paying them $15. I mean, there's no question that that's probably the answer, but how you get there, minimum wage is not the one. But, the reason why the Transcontinental Railroad was such a priority for Lincoln, he was convinced that if we didn't connect with California, it was going to break away. It was not going to be part of the U.S.
Well, there's also that commerce that can happen from
right, but it was, but he wanted the commerce to be. But anyway, to finish my story about the guy in the Central Pacific, he would either have to come across the country by stagecoach, which was like really tough because of a lot of Indians and stuff. You know, it was pretty bad areas. I mean, it was their areas, or you could either take a ship around the Cape, which was harrowing to say the least, or you could get off in Panama. Walk, you know, essentially travel through the jungle to the other side, then take a ship from the other side up the East Coast. So he did that like five or six times. He ended up dying of malaria.
Yeah,
that he caught. I mean, and Lincoln made.
Well, there were more than just hostile natives that were upset that the United States government was taking their lands.
Oh yeah,
it was the vast prairie, going over the Rocky Mountains.
We didn't go over. You went through
the Nevada desert. I mean, the Utah desert. I mean, that alone, I mean, there's just no water out there. And it's like going to the moon. You have to take your water and your food with you for the most part. And that was part of it, too. It was just...
Well, there was no railroad to get there. So when they started going from Council Bluffs east or west, they had to float all the ties and all the stuff up the Missouri River.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the Northwestern made it to Council Bluffs that you had a railroad to feed supplies from this end. Now, on the other end, on this end going west was pretty much all Irish people. And all they did was drink.
Yeah. And that and Freeman.
But then coming the other way, they didn't have enough people. They didn't want the Chinese, and finally they said, okay, we can't build it without the Chinese. So they let the Chinese in. And they treated these people like absolute shit. But now
if you were a Chinese person and your brother was murdered by a white dude and you witnessed it, Chinese people were not allowed to be a witness in a trial with a white person.
Well, when you
by California law,
when you were when they were digging tunnels, if there was an avalanche and swept off, 20 people, maybe they'd look for them in the spring. Maybe they wouldn't. They didn't care.
Yeah, they didn't care. Yeah,
but if you ever go see. Or see the movie, which I really would recommend anybody do, how they built Hoover Dam. Well, the first thing you had to do is do all these tunnels where the river essentially flowed through the mountains for 3 years while they built the dam.
Yeah.
But you had to build the tunnels first. Well, they had this massive jig, they call it, and it had all these drills on it. All right, so they would hit there, and they were pneumatic. They were air-powered. So the drills would drill into the rock, depth of like maybe 8 inches, say 8 to 10 inches, and in every one of the holes you'd put a stick of dynamite, and every run out of the thing you'd blast, and you got, I'm gonna say,
that had to be granite, right?
Yeah,
well, was granite rock.
But you could pretty much count on getting let's say 3 feet of tunnel every time you did it.
Yeah.
And then you swept it all out of there and you got stuff on that, and that's how people died or were really sickened, because the carbon monoxide of the trucks pulling the stuff out of there. Nobody knew the carbon monoxide was that bad for you. And there were no catalytic converters on them. Now, on the other, when they did the tunnels through the Sierra Nevada, you had all these Chinese guys. They drilled all these holes by hand.
Yep.
And then you packed them with black powder. There was no dynamite. Dynamite had not been invented yet. So they packed them with black powder. You blew it up. Maybe you got some rock to move. Maybe you didn't. you couldn't count on 3 feet every time. You couldn't count on anything. And then they tried nitroglycerin, but that was just too dangerous. They blew too many people up. But the amount those guys didn't drink. They got Sunday off. They used opium on Sunday, and the Chinese, one thing they did demand, they demanded vegetables. So they ate very healthy. Now the Irish guys didn't really like that.
Their vegetable was.
Yeah. So, but on the other side, they would have.
I'm not going to say it, but we know what their vegetable was.
Yeah. But they had all these flatbed trailers.
Yeah.
And every time you did like 3 or 4 miles in the road, the little town would move forward.
Yep.
And they put everything.
The hell on wheels.
Yeah. They'd put the flat. Well, there'd be like 4 saloons, 2 whorehouses, and maybe a general store that would move forward.
And in the Union Pacific probably ran all of it, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they ran all of it. But it was
company owned stores. That's definitely a monopsony.
Yeah.
And a monopoly example that I can use in my microeconomics course.
But what these guys did, talk about Enron. Enron didn't do anything new. these guys, the Central Pacific, I know did it, I think maybe the Indian Pacific might have as well. The people who were running it said, well, you know what? We're not making enough money. So what they did is, I think it was the Union Pacific, they formed another firm that they actually paid to lay the track. And they became the bigger shareholders of that firm. So when the government gave the money to the, or they sold property, they made it to the Union Pacific, they paid the other guys more dough. They essentially bankrupted the Union Pacific, where the owner, the guys who ran the place owned, say, 10% of it, because they poured all the money in the other place where they owned 70% of it. I mean, all these little tricks are not new at all. I mean, the other decision that Lincoln made, this is an interesting story about how, what America can do when they're led properly and when they put their mind to stuff. There were two different gauges in this country. The North had 4 feet, 8.5 inches, and the South used five feet. That's how wide the rails are apart. Russia and Europe, Russia's 5 feet. Actually, 5 feet is better because it can carry more weight, okay? So, Lincoln had...
You spread it out. It's like a snowshoe, right?
Yeah.
You spread it out.
I mean, but, you know, you wouldn't think the 3.5 inches would be that big of a deal, but it sort of is. So Lincoln made the call. It's going to be 4 feet, 8.5 inches. So the gauge...
Well, that benefited the Northern railroad.
It was the same as the Northern gauge. So... Yeah. At the end of the Civil War, you had all these tracks in the South that were 5 feet. So you couldn't just run a train from Chicago to Atlanta, right? Because it wouldn't fit on the rails. Yeah. So they decided to change all the rails from 5 feet to 4 feet, 8.5. And they planned this for a long time. Guess how long it took?
And the Northern companies probably got the contracts.
Well, I don't, there was a lot of people who were doing it. Okay. And basically, you tore up a rail and you moved it over. I mean, you didn't have to really do anything else. Guess how long it took to do that?
I don't know.
One weekend.
Really? To move the rails?
Move the rails for like thousands of miles of track.
Well, I mean, they were, you know, the funny thing about that, I was talking to a maintenance guy on tracks, which is Utah's public transit system, like the subway or the L. And he was telling me that they have to constantly adjust the rails because they move.
Sure they do.
Yeah, they move. They're constantly doing it. That's a constant thing they have to do, is they have to constantly change and adjust and align those rails. And I was like, wow.
Somebody say constantly, not every day.
Yeah, but I mean, he said it would be more than you would think. I mean, when you ride it, you think, oh, it's set. But, man, that tracks to my house, to the university I worked at in Utah when we lived there, there was a couple times where there was like an S to the track about a half mile from from our station near our house. And
well, especially if it gets hot in the summertime.
In a month, it was gone.
Yeah, I mean, you can, in the summertime, it'll expand. I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the original rail, there's actually, it's fascinating. Again, we'll talk stocks and everything after the break, but it's fascinating how the advance, everybody looks at a train track from like an old movie and say it's the same as it is now. No, it's not. The amount, the section of rail, like a 1 foot section of the rail, weighs like two or three times as much as it did when they first started. That's how serious, how pounded, how high tense that steel is now compared to the old stuff.
Wow.
You know what they used to have? I wonder how
often it wore out.
Now it doesn't wear out hardly at all.
Yeah,
but they used to. You see all the stone, the ballast. They used to be dirt. Hmm. Could you imagine how much that would move?
Oh yeah. Now the trains are much heavier though too.
Those old locomotives, the steam locomotives, are pretty damn heavy.
Yeah.
But
they weren't carrying as much. They weren't pulling as many cars.
No, but I mean the locomotive itself was heavy.
Yeah. I think you'd love this series, Tom.
When you see the ballast, the stone.
On Amazon Prime Video.
Do you think that's just regular stone? The ballast?
Oh, I don't know.
It's not. You couldn't put regular stone in there. It's if you look at it, all the sides are flat, so they won't move. They rub up against each other. They're flat and they're very coarse, so they won't move.
Yeah.
But anyway, they put all the tools out there. They had everybody. These few guys were this line, this mile. These few guys, they did it all, and they planned it for months. And in one weekend, They moved all the rails in the south. Now, you know, not all the yards and everything, but the mainline rails all got moved in a weekend.
What did they do with all the southern rail cars?
We had to put all new trucks.
Hmm. They put all new trucks in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of them got busted up during the war. But when you think of this fascinating stuff and how we used to be able to do this stuff. You know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, the Chinese, you know, the weird part, how crooked it is? Colonel Dodge, real quick story, and then we'll go to break. Colonel Dodge was, when they started building going west, they were getting paid by the mile, right?
Yeah.
So he heads to Washington. He comes back like 3 months later, and he sees, what did you idiots do? The first 100 miles or 200 or 150 miles whatever, they put this big bow where they could have done they could have done 100 miles.
That's actually in the series.
Yeah, it's called the great ox bow. But here's I'll finish up with this one. This was all done by these guys, these scouts, and this guy from San Francisco did a lot of it himself. They mapped, you know, with basically people shooting arrows at you. It was their property, so they had a right to shoot arrows at you, so I'm not denigrating that. But those guys surveyed this whole thing, and they laid the rails, and you know they ended up going through Moffitt group, and the only pass you can get through in is where the Moffitt family ate each other, right? They went through the pass, the Moffitt Pass?
Yeah.
Not Moffitt Pass. What's the name of the place where the family ate each other? What the hell's their name? Anyway, but when they built I-80, they had the benefit of satellite imagery. I-80 is not more than a half a mile from the railroad. That's how good the surveyors were. They almost were as good as the satellite imagery. And they're running running around on horseback with people shooting at them. But you underestimate these guys when they
they depict the land surveyors too in the series first.
When the Moffitt Tunnel was the one that goes through past Denver. So when it goes to Iraqis, that wasn't finished till like 1900, because that's why you could never take Denver and go west. You had to go either a northern route or a southern route.
Yeah, you had to go through Wyoming, where it's a little flatter
and
easier putting a grade.
Well, so these guys start digging the tunnel from both ends, right? Using hand calculations. When they made it to the middle, of course, your thought would be you're not going to meet up. One guy's going to be over here, and the other guy's over here. The tunnels, right? When they got to the middle, they were off by like a quarter inch or something.
Wow, that is impressive.
How the hell did people do that? Which is,
yeah,
you know, and now you think about you need satellites, you need this, and that, you need lasers. No, you don't. I mean, those guys.
Well, there's a lot of information that we forget.
Yeah,
you know, how did the Egyptians build those pyramids?
Well,
we don't even know if the Egyptians built those pyramids.
Well, first of all, that's
you
another,
can't carbon date.
That's another whole topic because there's a guy on YouTube that is a big historian on this stuff.
Yeah,
he's convinced the Great Pyramid was built centuries before the Egyptians.
Yeah,
was built
by
someone.
There's no way to test it.
Well,
you just can't.
Here's the guy's main point. You could, first of all, the amount of stones. Even if you look at like 10 stones a day, if you could figure out how to get them there, and they bought them by water and all this kind of stuff. If you did that, it would take forever because there's like a million stones in the thing. So
you got the Easter Island stones,
right?
How'd they do that?
But here's what the guy came up with that I can't debate him whatsoever. Because the problem when you put something that heavy on anything is you have to prepare the ground. You can't just put a building on a foundation. If the foundation isn't good enough, the building's going to crunch the foundation. See, that thing is so heavy. And if you look at it, it hasn't deflected more than an inch on any corner.
There's no way an ancient society did that.
He goes, he says, even if they could figure out a way to build it, there's no way they could make the base that stable. And I never even thought it. Well, why would I think about it? I'm not an engineer. Anyway, we'll go to break, and we'll come back and talk about the market and these interest rates. Now, they were up yesterday. Every time I see them go up, because I did this for, you know, how many years, thinking that they were going to go up. And every time I bet them to the bonds to the downside, I made money maybe half the time. I got my ass kicked half the time. Now, today, I'm sure the Fed noticed it, and they're buying these bonds. And we're going to see the Fed balance sheet up, and we're going to do everything that they're doing. Everything you say they're doing, they're doing. SP Futures up 34, NASDAQ Futures up 210. I guess you got to stay long, and the day that it goes down, you better have a few puts in your pocket. I don't know what else to do. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamal, Ricky on the board. S&P Futures up 33 now, and NASDAQ Futures up 208. Looks like it's going to be a bullish day. We were down yesterday, so we can't do that 2 days in a row. We all know that. We have to make sure that the market is the heart of the economy now, at least the people who count. Over in Europe, we've got the Europeans edge higher as Iran war concerns weigh on sentiment. We're up so much higher than when the damn war started. How many times are they gonna run with this headline? I don't get it. DAX up 379, 1.6%. FTSE, which has been very contrary lately, and I have no idea why. They're down 138, 1.3%. CAC around up 57.7. My concern there is the British are now our second or third biggest investors into treasuries here. So if we continue to beat up on the British other than saying they deserve it, by the way, we owe them a lot of dough, so we better be careful there. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 228.4%. Hang Seng down 197.7%. Shanghai up 4, call that flat. Actually, Shanghai has not been open since the 30th of April. I'm not sure why that is, but they, I don't think it's the new year. What's going on over there? But they haven't been open for like 4 days now. Bonds down 3 basis points, 4.41. It's the 10-year. They did print over 4.5 yesterday. And the 30-year is still over 5, but it's 5.5. Almost exactly 5. It's been trying to get through 5, and now it's coming back down a little bit today. Oil is down 342, still over 100, 103. Brent down 252, 111 bucks. Brent or RBOB is down 6 cents, but still 366, which equates to about a high 4 oil or gas. And everything here is 499, everything I've seen. So that was a shocker. Heating oil is down 7 cents, but still 4 bucks. Heating oil is higher than RBOB, and everywhere you go, you'll see diesel is higher than gas. Gold up $49.90 after going down yesterday, $45.83. Silver up 89 cents, $74.42. Foreign exchange, kind of right where we've been, 117 on the euro, 135 on the pound. That's been pretty steady. Crypto up 1,200 bucks, 81,250. I'm going to ask Hal about that, where crypto is now, since we're trying to do all this stuff with Iran and everybody, if everybody's trading more in crypto, God, what could go wrong there? Ricky, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 here in Chicago. We're looking at about 54 degrees right now with a high of 59. Showering spots early this morning, otherwise mostly cloudy and cooler with a low of 47 degrees tonight. Phoenix, Arizona, 67 degrees right now with a high of 78. A shower in places this morning as well, otherwise cool with clouds and sunshine. Smoke from the area, from area fires will lead to poor air quality, so watch out for that. Tonight will be mainly clear and smoky with a low of 59 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, accident reported earlier this morning on Dan Ryan local lanes west before 18th Street and exit 52C. The accident involves three vehicles, so expect some delays of up to 20 minutes. Another earlier accident westbound Eisenhower before North Mill Road. Bridge construction on Kennedy westbound at Foster Avenue, exit 83A. The exit is closed and construction is blocking some lanes, so expect some delays as well. Sports real quick, Cubs beat Reds 5-4. White Sox beat Angels 6-0, and today we got Reds at Cubs at 6:40 p.m., White Sox at Angels at 8:38 p.m., and Pirates at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. For the NHL playoffs round 2, we got Hurricanes beating Flyers 3-2 yesterday, and Golden Knights beating Ducks 3-1. Today we got game 2 for Wild at Avalanche at 7 p.m. For the NBA, we got the semifinals game 1. Knicks beat 76ers yesterday, 137-98, and Timberwolves beat Spurs 104-102. Today we got Cavaliers at Pistons at 6 p.m. and Lakers at Thunder at 7:30 p.m. If you're looking for a reason to raise a glass and give back, join Fresh of Fisher House and Brewing If you're looking for a reason to raise a glass and give back, join Friends of Fisher House and Revolution Brewing for the Heroes for Heroes kickoff party happening this Friday, May 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at their Ketzi Brewery. Swing through for food, raffles, good company, and a chance to learn about Fisher House and how they support our military. For the month of May, a portion of Revolution sales will be donated to Friends of Fisher House, providing a home away from home for veterans and military families. This event is free and open to anyone who will support. That's the Heroes for Heroes kickoff party on this Friday, May 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at 3340 North Ketzi. Save the date and raise a glass for our heroes. Back over to you, Chief.
We actually had an email yesterday from one of our longtime listeners. Said he had made a donation to Fisher House and his company matched.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So, Hal, what's going on here? I looked at the money supply growth in South Korea. It's pushing 7%, and their markets go up every day. What are we doing? Does anybody really care about this inflation?
Well, I just looked at the most recent release of M2, weekly M2. And right now, it's increasing 5% from last year. The trend, if you were to look at maybe a 1 year, the year-to-date trend, it doesn't look good. But my quadrant trend has it up 2.3% in a year. So if you look at it long run, this long-run trend I've been tracking is only up 2.3%. But if you look at it from a much shorter time frame, say 6 months, it does not look good. I mean, no. It looks like it's going vertical.
Yeah, and then the balance sheet was going vertical as well, and it kind of toned down a little last month. But I mean, the bizarre part here, and this is what I think, correct me on this, Al, the difference, I mean, the two major inflationary periods were obviously when I was younger, but the issue there was is if Hal's mom, my mom, had some money to put in the bank, you never lost money on the deal, because inflation was 12%, the banks were paying 14%.
Yep.
So you got something in addition to it. You might ask yourself, this time, how did inflation go up this much with the interest rates given to you in a bank never go up? Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with, I mean, one of the most layup trades, other than maybe when I started the business and the Dow was 800, it would have to go up one of these days, was when the 30-year rate got down to like what, 1.5 or something. It could only go up from there, Al. I mean, I guess it could go down in Europe and went negative, but that was a short-term phenomenon. You knew at some point it was going to come back to a normal number. The question is when. Well, I must have got short bonds for my clients, you know, 15 times in that period, and we made money maybe a little more than half the times. The fly in the ointment that I never saw coming, and I'll admit it, I mean, unlike most people, never make a mistake. I never dreamed that every time I tried to sell a bond, the Fed was buying it. And they bought, what, $4 trillion worth of bonds in how many months during COVID?
Yeah.
I mean, I never, and guess what? I have some pretty good-sized clients, but we're not as big as the Fed.
Yeah.
I couldn't exactly match up dollar for dollar on the $4 trillion.
Well, who wouldn't want to be their own banker?
Yeah. Where
they could just write a check and poof, there's new money.
And I think what we see now is every time they pour in some money, and it looks to me like, God, these rates are going up. Now, they have been creeping up here, by the way, because we're over 5 on the 30-year. But when every time they go up, all you have to do is look at the Fed balance sheet, and it's going up. So they're going out and buying stuff. So every time I try and sell them, thinking, God, they only can go one way here. Look at the inflation numbers. They're buying them from you. And guess what? They're bigger. So, and they went up to, you know, how big did the balance sheet get? Well, at some point, now where the point is, that's a losing proposition. And then when all the other places do the same thing, you never see the dollar move, really, vis-a-vis the yen. Well, the yen has been...
Well, the reason why we had inflation, horrible inflation in the past when the Fed would do this, is because the money that the Fed would create would leave the banking system in the form of a loan. And that lending upon lending upon lending is where you get that money multiplication. Today, the Fed has devised... I don't know if it's the Fed, maybe it's the people that pull the strings on the Fed, but they devised a system where they can keep that money trapped in the banking system, and it's all trapped in there pretty well, except for the money that's leaking out in the form of loans to non-depository financial institutions, which ends up in margin debt, which is what's causing the stock market to rise even on bad economic data.
Well, the just in the last 2 days, let's call it even here. Let's say Micron's up an even $60. You know, it might be 58 or something, but let's call it 60. There's 1.13 billion shares outstanding. So we're talking about a market value of $60 billion up in 1 day or 2 days, which is, like Hal's saying, it's no big deal. However, if I had, well, we have people at PTI that has my Micron shares. Let's say they were all here. You know, I don't know if that'd be nice or not. I wouldn't want to be that big. But say they were all here. They could call today and buy $120 billion of other stock, because they now have $60 billion in buying power in their account that they could, and they can use that to buy. So, if the example that I put two and two together finally, Hal, after listening to you and not understanding what you were talking about, and then all of a sudden it kind of dawned on me that if you wanted to buy, say, and you had cash, you wanted to buy Micron, and it's, let's say it's $600. You want to buy 1,000 shares. Well, duh, that's $600,000, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to send PTI or RBC or Interactive Brokers, our two clearing firms. You don't have to send them $600,000. You can send them $300,000.
Yeah.
And you will have a loan this afternoon of $300,000. It's the easiest place in the world to get a loan. Now, and the only thing, now, if it drops, plus if it starts to drop, you don't have to come up with any more money until that 50% becomes 30%, which it could happen since the stock went up this much. And the Fed, they're not what they
But the Fed tries to prevent that by inflating the currency.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying,
they want a constant,
what they ought to do,
inflation.
What they ought to do, seeing what is going on with the market. Now the problem is that the 5% of the people that own most of the market are the people that are governing the country. You're not going to get any rational decision.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, with the market doing this...
Oh, it's a rational decision.
Well, it is. Okay, you're not going to get a rational decision for
everybody. It
looks
irrational to us, but it's not irrational to them.
When you have a war going on, and you see the market doing this because of money coming in, the Fed, in my opinion, 3 weeks ago, should have said initial margin is now 60%, not... Or you can only borrow 40% instead of 50%, in my opinion. Now, of course, nobody wants to do that because you want it to go up. But right now, you could send that's a $300,000 loan. Explain to me, if you and I bought a plumbing company, or if we weren't GameStop trying to buy eBay, that they went out and got a loan, explain to me how difficult it would be for you and me and Carl to get a $300,000 loan in 2 days. Where in God's name are we going to do that?
Yeah.
It ain't happening. So what you're saying...
It's not going to happen in this universe. We'd have to go to that box in the dark matter...
Yeah.
Apple series,
which is exactly,
go to a different universe.
See, I think that you've done an amazing job at bringing this stuff up, but now I'm trying to help you with, you don't know how right you are, son.
But you know, you mentioned Bitcoin before the break.
Yeah,
if you look at when its collapse started, you have these incredible profits that have been made in Bitcoin. About a month later is when you start seeing the lending to non-depository financial institutions explode. And that's exploded over 40% in just over a year and a couple months, maybe a year and 3 months. That collapse, I think, has something to do with the meteoric rise in the only form of lending that seems to be rising faster than the rate of inflation.
Well,
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think you had a bunch of people who made a ton of money out of Bitcoin. They took that money and they piled it into loans that were used to buy the stock market. Well, and if I were working at the SEC or the Federal Reserve, I'd be like, I wonder what's going on here.
They will never do that.
They don't want to know.
No, they don't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as an Austrian sort of dude, you should realize that if you follow what happened with the tulip craze, right? And when people put tulips, you know, this is the 16th century, or actually 1600, so it'll be the 17th century. This happened, and all of a sudden tulips became amazingly valuable, and there was a huge speculation. Well, you know, nobody really... So I'm reading all this stuff, right? I'm trying to put, you know, see if there's any parallels. And all of a sudden I found the parallels that I never dreamed I would find. all of a sudden people are buying tulips. Okay, so if you buy Micron here or any other place, and you pay $200,000, and you actually send us the check. If everybody had to send the check for $200,000, and it goes to $300,000, and it goes to $150,000, it, other than my client, I want him to make money, and he wants to make money, or he or she, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really affect anybody else, does it? I mean, to a certain extent, it's cash money on the barrelhead. Now, if you lose it, you lose wealth, and if you make it, you make wealth. I get that part. But what happened with the tulips, as long as that was happening, there really wasn't a crisis. People were just buying tulips instead of buying beer. And it got to the point where one tulip was worth more than an entire wagon load of beer. Now, you know it was getting too high when that happened, you know.
Was there a purpose to the tulips other than...
Well, they were not indigenous to Austria, and they were coming in, and people wanted their place to look good. But then all of a sudden, they became a speculative good, you know, sort of mm-hmm. like... anything that maybe is here, you know, baseball cards or whatever you want to call it. But here's what happened. At some point, they had rudimentary exchanges over there. And all of a sudden, the tulips now are getting listed on the exchanges.
Hmm.
And then it got to the point where instead of just ponying up the money for the tulip, people would lend you money to buy the tulip. And as soon as I saw that, I go, uh-oh. And then all of a sudden, it was about the same time that people now could borrow money to buy Bitcoin. It became marginable.
Yep.
And I go, okay, therein lies the rub. So when tulips came flying down, it wasn't just a bunch of people who paid, you know, $50 for the tulip, saw it go to $150, went back to $50, where, you know, they would care, but there's no force majeure there. There's nothing that says, but if you borrowed the money to buy it at $150, and now it's down at $90, and the guy says, you owe me more money, You are forced to sell. So what you're talking about is also the ease of borrowing right now in the market, the ease of borrowing to buy Bitcoin. The problem comes down is if somebody buys, I'll try and do the math. If somebody calls me up right now, my brother, and says, "Buy me 1,000 shares of Micron." Okay, now he has to come up with $300,000, not $600,000, and that's good for 30%. So if I do my math, Hal, we're if the stock can now drop to where if your equity, if it drops to 580, all right, you no longer have 50% of its equity, right? It's more like, 45 or something. When that drops to 30, you're going to get the call saying, "Hey, Joe, you got to send us some more dough. You got to sell a few shares, or there's no or. I mean, we got to do one or the other." And he may say, "Fine, I'll send you another $100,000. Or he may say, "Sell me 500 shares. Or if I can't find him and it's now down to where it's 300, guess what? The clearing firm's going to sell it out on him.
Yep.
We're not going to. The clearing firm will. Well, now it becomes a forced sale. That's what you have to worry about. And that's why when I say...
Well, that forced sale, guess who gets to buy that?
Well, okay, but...
The guy that is flush. Yeah.
Yeah, but it also might be like catching a falling knife.
The bigger, badder financier, right?
Well, okay, but that leads me down another road in that everybody now is buying the dip. So, for instance... If say a stock's trading 600, Micron's trading 600. I'm not saying it's overvalued, undervalued. Let's say it's way overvalued and in somebody's mind. So, but the world today is buy the dip. Well, if it drops to 580, where it was like an hour ago, is that a dip? Does that mean it's value, or is the value 100 or 50? You know, it could go down to 500, and somebody might say, "Man, it's down from 600, it's trading 500, it's got to be a screaming buy." Well, that's one possibility, right?
Yeah.
Or they used to call it, you got to be careful catching a falling knife if you catch it by the tip, you know. You don't want to catch it by the tip in your head. If it lands on the ground and you pick it up, it's one thing. If it lands on your head and the tip's first, it's not so good. So, I mean, all this stuff, you can't categorize it. But when things, like, let's put it this way. You don't know how right you are with this, what you're talking about, is my compliment and my view on this.
Well, it's not really me. It's just Richard Cantillon. The guy was...
You're the one who did it.
Well, no, this guy did it, like, 300 or 400 years ago.
He's dead. He didn't do it. You did it. Wait a minute. Well, don't tell me. You had a seance. You had years. A seance and he showed up?
Oh. All I know is history tends to repeat, and repeated history repeats repeatedly. And that's how Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's all I got to say about that.
All right, so if you had a seance, instead of bringing in, like, beautiful ladies of the past and incredibly intelligent guys like Washington, Lincoln, you'd rather have old economists show up on your seance?
Yeah, like Cantillon and Turgot, well, J.B. Say, yeah.
Who's the guy that did what's the dude's name? It has the 66% stuff. What's his name? The technical guy. Oh, got it. Somebody just mentioned his name, and I forgot it. You know what I'm talking about. The guy with the big beard. I'll think of it. If a stock goes down or anything goes down, it comes back 2/3. It's a Fibonacci replacement.
Ah, okay.
No, you'd want to talk to Fibonacci and not like, you know, some beautiful lady or.
Well, actually, I'd love to have a DeLorean time machine and go have conversations with all kinds of people.
Oh God, I'd love to talk to Lincoln.
Oh, I'd love to talk to Lincoln, Washington, and the guys that captained the 2,000 merchant ships that were given a license to raid British shipping during the Revolutionary War. I'd love to talk to all those guys.
You're by the way, I was thinking about you because one of the escort ships, evidently from the Gerald R. Ford, piled into port, and they were. I think they were 10.5 months at sea. It was some kind of a frigate.
There's a lot of potential energy there.
Yeah. Yours are nuclear powered, but it wasn't
a little nuclear powered cruiser. Yeah.
But it was a cruiser.
Yeah, it was a little cruiser, about 500 feet long.
So, but what kind of guns were on the thing?
I think we had a 4-inch gun on the front. Then we had those R2D2 they call them R2D2. Guns. They look like R2D2.
So you didn't have like a 12-inch or a 10-inch, like a World War II cruiser.
I don't think we would have been. I think it would have knocked over our ship if we had a 12-inch gun. But we had a 4-inch and that rattled the ship pretty good.
Well, so you're not talking about a World War II heavy cruiser.
I've held those 4-inch shells in my hand. Those things, you know, because we got to pass them. You know, when we get a reloading ship, and they're gonna offload a bunch of these shells, we have to like. You do water bucket brigade, right? Where you pass the shell. Those things are pretty impressive, and they were only 4-inch. I can't even imagine the 12-inch ones.
Well, if you ever in Philadelphia, you're on the battleship New Jersey. The 16 inches are really something.
Oh man, that would be impressive.
Yeah, they're about.
When I saw that ship in the Persian Gulf, tell the tanker that just came out of port from Iran. Say, hey, we're going to put a shell in your engine room. And they put a shell into the engine room and opened up the side of the hole. I mean, that was impressive. I mean, whether you like the conflict or not, you got to admit that putting a shell in the engine room like that was just impressive.
Well, yours was a, when you say a cruiser, it didn't look at all like the Indianapolis or anything like that.
It just looked like a miniature, like, battleship kind of. So we had a flight deck on the back where we played basketball.
It was like a big destroyer.
It was like a small one.
Yeah.
Yeah. 500 feet long. Well, and it wasn't very wide. I think it was probably maybe 50. I can't even remember. It was so long ago, but the flight deck was like the width of a basketball court. The flight deck was like half court. Well, like three-on-three basketball tournaments?
If you had to do it again, would you like to have been the captain? Would you actually go topside?
Oh, I'd like to have been the captain because he had a space on the Truxton that was larger than apartments that I've had. He had his own cook. He had blue carpet. He had awesome views. He had his own office. I mean, it was really well set up. But being a sailor today would have been a lot better than back then because today you can have, you know, you could have a bunch of movies downloaded onto your freaking Mac or your PC, your laptop, or your phone. You can just have that content. We didn't have that when I was in the Navy. I had CDs, and CDs took up a lot of my locker room space. But today, you can just have everything on a laptop. You can watch your own TV shows. You can download that content from Amazon and Netflix. And
I get bored watching TV shows. God, if I ever was homesick a day, I'd be over in a day. Like, I can't watch stuff all day long.
Well, I know, but when you got... I mean, the alternative is the TV. They called it sight TV. And it was just basically the same... It was like in that series For All Mankind, the re-envisioning of the space race, where the Soviets got to the moon first, and it caused a decades-long space race, where in season 5 they're on Mars and exploring the asteroids. When the show depicts the astronauts on the lunar base, the Americans watching 5 episodes of Bob Newhart over and over and over again, and that's what site television was like. We somebody had a bunch of Seinfeld episodes on VCR tapes, but it was site TV showing you the same movies over and over and over.
You ever see a couple of those World War II movies where the two ships would meet, and they'd first thing they do is they transfer the eight.
Well, you know how many times I saw In Harm's Way.
Well, that's what these guys were doing. These are World War II movies where we've watched the same movies 10 times. They'd ship them to the other ship, and those guys had shipped their movies over to each other.
I saw In Harm's Way like 10 times on the ship.
That's a good flick. But
it is. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. Actually, I have the book.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Well, my favorite movie of all time in that genre is Sand Pebbles. The Sand Pebbles Steve McQueen and Candice Bergen. That is just so freaking good.
Oh, God, yeah. What, hey, if
shove off, Captain.
if you had to guess, assuming the Fed and everything's going to keep doing what they're doing, where would you say the rates have to get? The idea that they've gone from 1.5 to 4.5 and the market's like doubled is kind of bizarre to me to start with. But where do you think these rates would have to get for them to be real, real danger for the market? Or do you think that?
Well, I'm looking at the yield curve, and the yield curve is pretty steep. And in the past, everybody considered a upward sloping yield curve as a positive thing. But the problem with it is we're not getting 5% in a savings account. We're still getting 1 or 2%, right? Below inflation rate.
Well, I guess my question is, I see three things as a problem. One is, for whatever reason, our national policy is to piss off our friends.
Yeah.
And the issue I have with that is, if we weren't borrowing any money from them, I wouldn't be all that concerned about it. But the fact is, Japan, Britain, and China are our top three people that I wouldn't exactly call China a friend, but those are our top three people loaning us money.
Well, China and Russia and all these nations should be our friend. We should be
engaging
in trade with them.
I get that part. But if we cause enough problems in Japan with oil prices and everything, there's a chance they might not show up for one of these auctions.
Yeah.
And we're broke. We're spending money so damn fast. You know.
I think the key observation here is, who else are you gonna call? Right, Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Well,
who are you gonna call?
Well, so the question on the table.
We have the least bad, I guess, government currency on the planet. The least bad.
Okay, but all
these currencies are bad. Ours is just not as bad as everybody else's.
All right, a question on the table that you're avoiding. Where, say, 10 years, 4.5. Where is it trouble for the market? 5, 5.5, 6, 7. Where the market goes?
You know, in this age of interest on reserves, I used to have a pretty good crystal ball, and it's really hard to tell when the Fed is being expansionary or contractionary with interest on reserves. It's just
I think
they can buy securities or sell them and then move interest rates independently. Now, in the past, before 2008, you kind of knew where they were going. They would signal where they're going, and you could kind of tell.
I think if you look at,
I think it's really difficult now.
I don't think it's difficult at all, to be honest with you, because the amount of money, I think the last time I checked with my manual stopwatch, we're blowing through $1 million every 22 seconds.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Right, so you're going to
get... they're keeping most of that money trapped up in the banking system with interest on reserves.
But you're going to cover it one of three ways. Borrow it, which mostly we're doing overseas, we're doing half overseas. And those guys are getting destroyed by this. What's going on here? UK and Japan. So that could be a little bit of a problem. We're not going to tax it, although he tried taxing it through tariffs by telling people it's not a tax, which is amazingly ignorant that anybody believed that, but people did. So now we can't really do that. Although,
well, he's using a different tool to levy tariffs.
Well,
so.
Okay, yeah, but so I mean,
I think he's got tariffs at 10 or 20%.
Well, my nephew told me. My nephew told me that the price of tungsten coming out of China
just went up 600%. Now, tungsten is used, but I don't, I'm no chemist. Tungsten is a binding step in making carbide tip blades and drills and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So he says that they just got to notice smaller suppliers. All that drills and blades and stuff, these guys got a metalworking facility, went up 30% on May 1st.
Yeah.
Now, Trump has a 25% tax on China. Right, so now the 25%, the government's getting part of that money. Do they really care about my nephew's metalworking place? They're getting their piece.
Yeah.
Now, what they care about is the market going up and Elon Musk getting his bonus, it appears. That I don't think there's a lot of carrier for you and me, even though the Meta people think that he, or the MAGA people think he's all for them. I would hope at some point they're losing
it. You know, he's, call him whatever you want, but the guy leverages crazy. And the interesting thing about it is there's so much oil in the Persian Gulf. If the blockade and the Operation Freedom, whatever they call that, where they protect ships coming and going, if all that oil comes out of the Persian Gulf, I think real prices are headed down.
They're down some, but don't believe it totally, because
the Navy is killing those little speedboats that the Iranians are using to try to attack non-Iranian ships. But those are being blown up like the cartel ships. Whether you like it or not, they're being blown up left and right.
Well, I love it.
IRG has to point a gun at a guy to jump in one of those gunboats.
I love it when we kill people, as you can tell.
Well, I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying there's not going to be a lot of IRG volunteers to jump on those boats to attack the ship.
What I'm trying to get to, we got a dash here, but there's oil in the ships in the Gulf, but also the wells and stuff have been turned off now.
Oh yeah, if you cap those wells, if you turn them off, then you have to essentially redraw.
I'm with you. There's oil to be had sitting around in tankers.
Why Oman broke away from the cartel. They want to sell at these high prices.
But don't make the connection that there's 75 days worth of normal production sitting there. There's not.
Yeah.
There might be 20 days or 30. Right. They're not the whole mess.
But did you notice, as soon as Oman broke away from OPEC, OPEC released a statement and said they're going to pump more oil. So that competition, everybody wants to sell oil at this high price. So you got UAE, they broke away, right? They're gonna drill more. They're going to release more oil.
OPEC,
and OPEC's following that up.
But OPEC is a shadow of the former self.
Yeah.
Compared to what they
were. But the competition will do what? It'll increase the quantities because people want to sell at these elevated prices.
All right. Well, I'm saying they have to be down in terms of oil shipped how much in the last 75 days or 3 months?
Yeah, I tried finding the most recent release of that data, and the data seems to be kind of old, so it's kind of hard to tell what's going on.
Or they're not giving it to us, one or the other. All right, bud. Good stuff. You make any more presentations, or what are you doing? Are you done with finals?
Well, the semester is wrapping up. I have students taking an exam on my health statistics class. It's wrapping up, and then I'm going to teach health economics back-to-back in Summer 1 and Summer 2 online. And then I'm working on a research paper that involves minimum wages and trying to figure out a way to identify... We can't observe the market wage when there's a binding minimum wage. So we're coming up with a really interesting way to identify that relationship to better understand what state minimum wage rates do to people who employ low-skilled labor.
Well, I like if you were a politician, you'd like the market wage to be 12, the minimum wage to be 2, so you can raise it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So you can raise it
in Utah.
Yeah, so you can raise it to 4 and not cause any damage and still make yourself look good.
Well, in Utah, there's no minimum wage, and you don't need it because the market wage is well above the federal. I mean, working at a car wash for trucks, you can make $18 an hour. That's well above them. Yeah. So the market wage rates are sufficiently high in Utah. You don't need a minimum wage.
Well, there you go. All right, be good, bud. SP Futures up 35. Yep. NASDAQ Futures up 217. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.